No paths are bound. Motaozushi fan fiction, written by Stilton Basket, read by God of Laundry Baskets. Summary. On a dark night in the middle of summer, Wei Wuxian flees to the burial mounds. Less than 12 hours later, Lan Qiren goes after him. When Lan Qiren arrives at the Jinling Tai in the aftermath of the disastrous crowd hunt at Bai Feng Shan, he is immediately suspicious. Upon his entry, Jin Guangshan announces that Wei Wuxian has stolen all the Wen prisoners held at the nearest work camp, murdered several guards, all from the Lanling Jin clan, and vanished into the night, leaving nothing but a field of corpses behind as proof of his crime. The Jin cultivators in the Glamour Hall are all speaking at once, and accusations and curses upon Wei Wuxian's name flow as thickly as the wine that keeps being handed around those banquet tables. Lan Qiren narrows his eyes. Wine? At a gathering like this? He declines the glass he is offered for courtesy's sake and retreats to the spot where Shichen and Wanji are standing, reaching them just as Jin Guangshan calls his guests to order. "What is going on?" he demands. "Shichen!" "Ah," his nephew says, looking incredibly thankful at the sight of him. "Well, Wei Gongzi came into the feast shouting about Wen Chonglin yesterday, and what would the Lanling Jin have to do with Wen Chonglin?" Lan Qiren asks. He remembers the boy from that too short year before the war. Wen Ning was too young to join the class Wanji was in, so he took a few lectures with the disciple group 2 years below. Lan Qiren recalls him as a shy young man, without much strength, desperately fond of his elder sister, and he would have been no good to the Wens in combat even if he were pressed into service. Furthermore, Wen Qing was arrested for betraying her kin during the Sunshot campaign, and Wanji mentioned that Wen Chao imprisoned Wen Ning alongside her before transferring him away to Yiling. Lan Qiren mulls over the matter, while Jin Gongshan ushers everyone to sit down, wondering when Wen Ning could possibly have been imprisoned by the Jin, because Wen Qing went free to find her brother with Zhang Zhongzhu's blessing, and Wen Chao was killed not long after that. So when did the Jin sect get its hands on Wen Ning? He is distracted from his thoughts when a young Jin cultivator jumps up, Jing Zongzhu's crier for the day, most likely, and retells the account of Wei Wuxian's attack on the prison camp for what must be the fourth or fifth time since Lan Qiren arrived. It sounds more dastardly every time he hears it, and, at last, when the crowd is properly riled, Jin Guangshan rises to his feet and remarks on Wei Wuxian's shamelessness at the hunt. Was there a shameless way to kill demons? And his disregard for the wishes of his own sect leader. Wei Ying never said that. Jin Guangshan pauses. Ah? I have never heard Wei Ying disrespect Jiang Zongzhu. Wanji's eyes narrow, glinting fiercely in a peony-shaped spot of light from one of the high windows. Never, and certainly not yesterday. The Jin sect leader opens his mouth, not quite embarrassed, but somewhat discomforted by Wanji's insistence. For his part, Lan Qiren gazes around the assembly and tries not to be sickened to his tea when he sees how small the respective sect congregations are. With the exception of the Jin sect, which is as obnoxiously large and loud as ever, a full sixth of Gusu Lan's cultivators died during the burning of cloud recesses and the early months of the war, with slightly less than that number slain from the Jinghe Nie, and every last child at Lotus Pier was killed when Wen Chao stormed Yumeng. Wei Wuxian is nothing more than a child himself, for all Jing Gongshan's seems so petrified by him. Suddenly, Manchu Ren looks up. The murders of the Jing guards are being discussed again, and the various dignitaries sitting near them are shouting at the tops of their lungs, repeating the various brutal ways in which the wardens died. Several had their skulls smashed to pieces, some were torn limb from limb, and some had been transfixed upon the branches of a nearby tree, and one was crushed into a pulp with nothing left from the body but the bones. He did not even treat the corpses of the Wen dogs he slaughtered in such a way. Someone from the Yao sect howls. Despite himself, Manchu Ren wholeheartedly concurs with that last. The majority of the Wens found in Wei Wuxian's wake, save for those he defeated on the battlefield which were killed by the armies of fierce corpses he sent ahead of him, died by hanging or burning or drowning, as if he had compelled them to end themselves in whichever way he could. The bodies themselves are mostly whole, aside from the death wounds, with the exception of the torture he inflicted upon Wen Chao. He was not whole when Zhang Guanyin and I found him, he heard Wang Ji whisper once, horrified to an equally horrified Man Shichun. He had eaten his own flesh down to the fingers on his hands. How could Wei Ying do such a thing? After that, he could not bear to witness Wei Wuxian's dark cultivation. Pleading with his friend, if friend he was, for Lan Qirun knows that desperation from his own youth, from his brother begging on bended knee for his wife to repent for her crimes. To give up the dark path and return to the righteous path of Jin Dao, nearly every time they met. Wang Ji entreated and argued and insisted that Wei Wuxian come to Gusu to rest and reflect and heal. But Wei Wuxian refused, stupid boy that he is. And now his arrogance might very well be the end of him. I don't understand, Lan Ju Chun says suddenly. Wei Gongzu certainly never used such methods on the battlefield. Why would he kill our own cultivators that way? Jin Zuzhen barks, though Lan Qiren very much doubts that lout of a man was present to witness what happened. It was at Wen Ning's hand that Wei Wuxian... Lan Qiren feels the blood drain from his face. Oh, heavens. Wei Wuxian reached the work camp to find Wen Zhonglin dead. The boy must have been killed. He must have been. He was a cultivator, albeit a weak one, and any minor illness or wound would have healed with the aid of his Jin Dan. He might even have been practiced enough to perform Inidia for a time and thus endure no matter how meager his rations were or how hard he was worked in the quarry there. And, as any cultivator worth their sword learns within the first year of training, no fierce corpse or demon or ghoul would let its living killers escape unscathed if it ever had the chance to revenge itself. How did Wen Zhonglin die? He demands, and his voice echoes in the sudden stillness like a gong, reverberating from wall to wall as if a giant had spoken, and not a scholarly cultivator in his mid-40s who has spent the last 25 years of his life rearing and teaching children. Who killed him? In the silence that followed, Lan Qiren could have heard a pin clinking against the marble floor. He repeats the question and receives no satisfactory answer, so he rises to his feet, tucking his right hand behind his back, and fixes his gaze straight upon Jing Guangshan. No one has reported multiple fierce corpses being present there, he says. In fact, every report concurs on the fact that there was only one. And what a dangerous one it was, sucked Leader Yao Booms, to wreck such devastation with a single Xiangshu when he desecrated burial mounds by the hundreds for the numbers Wei Ying used during the Sunshot campaign. It is unheard of, even for him. No, it is not, Lan Qiren returns. I will not say that he had no part in the bloodshed, but I have taught cultivation theory for these last 2 decades, and for a corpse that received a soul-setting riot in childhood to react in such a way, it must have been taking vengeance upon its murderers. Wei Wuxian's fierce corpses are not particularly strong, and neither is there much resentment in any of them. His strength in battle was that he could command legions of undead soldiers, not that he manipulated every single one with great skill. And they were mostly the bodies of non-cultivators, and Wens whose bodies he treated with talismans and resentful energy before he took them to war. If Wen Ning's corpse is responsible for the destruction at Chongqi, then the boy died in such torment that it broke the soul-calming seal completely. And as for the rest of the prisoners, I cannot imagine Wei Wuxian leaving them to the same fate if they yet lived. Jin Gongshan, what depravity have your people sunk to in the name of running a prison? Jin Zizhen blusters about the dangerous Wen cultivators who were kept at Xiangqi Dao, and how his cousin and uncle had ensured that they were placed there for the safety of all. Lan Qiren ignores him. None of the dignitaries present here can see an inch in front of their noses, except for the disciple girl sitting by Jin Zuxuan, and Lan Qiren can feel his brain begin to wither the longer he spends breathing the same air. Lan, with me, he says icily. Though he has not turned around, he can almost hear Xi Chen's shoulders slump in relief at the thought of having someone else in charge for once. We are going after Wei Ying. Though Lan Qiren knew more or less what must have transpired at the camp last night, the proof of it is worse than anything he could have imagined. His people catch up to Wei Wuxian in the burial mounds and find him with a group of the old, the sick, and the weak. And in Wen Ning's case, the dead. There is even a child, just old enough to stagger a few steps on its poor muddy feet, and a young woman not much older than Wen Qing, and grandmothers and grandfathers who have welcomed and spent twice Lan Qiren's span of years. It takes some time to negotiate their return to the cloud recesses, even after the Lans manage to fight their way through the clouds of resentful energy Wei Wuxian keeps summoning to throw them off the path. He and Wen Qing refuse to go, insisting that Wen Quanglin can be brought back to life, and neither Wang Ji nor Xi Chen can sway them until the toddler in Wei Ying's arms begins crying for food. And Qiren's heart breaks at the sound, and he would have tried to comfort the child if his new guardian didn't seem so eager to smite the whole Lan contingent down where it stands. When Ajan and Ahuan were this little, they were safe in warm cradles with him close by, albeit not in their mother's arms where they belonged, and they never had to make more than a single sound of hunger before someone hurried over to feed them. Surely, you can't mean to take that baby in there, Xi Chen gasps. The baby's pinched face and small clinging hands have wounded his nephew to the core, and Lan Qiren wonders wryly whether Jin Gongyao knew of what was happening at the camp, and whether Lan Xi Chen will ever speak to the man again if he did. Wei Gongzi, please, we do not mean you any harm. Then take the rest of the Wens, Wei Wuxian returns, turning his back on them. Wen Qing and I are staying here with Wen Ning. It's us the Jin clan wants, so you can look after the others. There is a kind of madness in his eyes. Madness mixed with anguish and grief and white-hot rage. And then Qi Ren is reminded once again of the late Madame Lan. On the day before she killed his brother's teacher, one of the young outer disciples sought Chen Mingyan out in tears during a night hunt, drawing her so far away from the rest of the group that Lan Qiren's brothers made him double back to look for the two women and bring them back to safety. There was a fire in the way Chen Mingyan looked at him then, as if she could have snapped someone's neck with her bare hands, even as she stood alone, with Yan Jiali's head drawn low on her shoulder. And the next night, the disciples of the Lan clan were hunting her down instead of any ghoul or demon. "Why didn't you tell me?" Lan Haijing had begged, holding his new wife's hands in despair after the deed was done. "We could have charged him with Yang Gunyang's evidence. There would have been a trial." "And with what proof would you have sentenced him?" Madame Lan said placidly. Everyone knew he doted on Yan Jiali. She was the most promising disciple he ever taught. She was devoted to him. Would he have been convicted of his crime, do you think? Or merely punished for yielding to temptation before your sect granted him the girl he violated as a bride to restore her honor? And Qi Ren was young then, only 17, but even he knew that Yan Jiali's testimony would not hold water in court, for it was only the poor girl's word against her attackers that she had not willingly yielded to him. Cheng Mingyan knew it better than he did, for she was a woman and a rogue cultivator with no protection against the world save herself, and she took Yan Jiali's secret to her grave after extracting a blood oath from her husband never to reveal it. No one came to save Chen Mingyan, and no one had saved Yan Jiali but Chen Mingyan herself. Wei Ying is not in the same place now, for he is still removed from the Wen remnants he guards in his own mind. No one has hunted him but the Qishan Wen, who have long since been intolerable to all, and he has enjoyed all the benefits of his rank as a wealthy young master for these last 15 years or so. But if the world should ever grow dark and unfriendly and rotten in his eyes, as it did for his late sister-in-law, then he will strike out and kill as he pleases, and suffer the consequences without a murmur as long as he can rest at ease, knowing that justice was done by his hand, if no one else's. And Qi Ren cannot countenance that, for two very simple reasons. First, because it would place himself and his sect opposite justice, whether that meant siding with the Jinns in their gilded tower or making a show of virtue by removing themselves from the fight entirely. And secondly, because his Wanji has vowed his heart and love to this man, as his brother once did to a woman who announced herself to the elder she killed and did not even bother to hide the fact that she was the one who killed him. "Poor child," he thinks, closing his fist around the hilt of his sword. What did he suffer during the war that no one else has seen? Has no one tended his hurts at all since then? "You will come with us, and you will bring Wen Ning and his sister, and you can do whatever must be done out of the wind and the rain, and with the knowledge of our sect library to guide you," Lan Qiren says at last. Wen Gunyang must eat and rest, for she cannot help Wen Ning if her Jidan is focused on performing Inida, and neither can you. Come. Wei Wuxian blinks, hope warring with suspicion in his face. And then he turns to Wanji like a supplicant, pleading before the heavens. "Wei Ying," Wanji begs. "Please." He crumbles, swaying forward into Wanji's arms like a tree falling to earth. and Lan Chiren knows that the battle is won. Despite Lan Chiren's best efforts, it is many months before the repercussions of Wei Ying's supposed departure from the righteous path can finally be dealt with. The Wens are installed in a village just down the mountain from the cloud recesses, since most of the grannies and granduncles are far too old to take the cloud recesses' endless flights of stairs when going from place to place, but well within the wards to keep them safe from harm. Lan Chichun handles the backlash from the Jin sect, though he clearly dislikes doing it, for Jing Gongyao has indeed known how inhumanely the Wens were treated in Guangqi, and could give no satisfactory excuse for failing to do anything about it. Nie Mingzhu stood by him through it all, never wavering, and Lan Chiren spotted the shy glances Nie Gongzhu kept sending Lan Chichun and left them to it, content. If all goes well, he thinks, he might have both his nephews married soon, instead of only one. That is, if only his other nephew would stop pussyfooting around Wei Wuxian and ask for his hand in marriage like a man. For Wei Ying did not return to Lotus Pier after Wen Ning was revived, though even Wan Ji expected him to. There was no place for the Wens in Yunmeng, he said. Not as long as his sister still cherished hopes of marrying Jin Zuzhuan. And the best thing he could do was distance himself from his adopted siblings in an effort to keep their future relations with Lan Ling as smooth as possible. Zhang Wanying sent word, and even visited, pleading with him to return. But he was unwilling to set himself against Jin Guangshan, and of the Wens, he would only have permitted Wen Qing to come back with him. Wei Wuxian refused, though very gently, and said farewell to his brother at the gates before going straight back to the Jingchi, where he and Wan Ji have already taken up residence together.
And you approve of that, Shufu?
Lan Chishun mutters, desperately trying not to laugh as Wei Ying turns a corner and disappears. They are not yet married. Lan Chiren finishes marking another essay and puts it aside. No, not really, he confesses. But then, it's not as if you asked for my permission when Nie Zhangzhu moved into the Hanxi and convinced his entire clan to pretend that he was still living in Qingke. Shichen's face goes white.
Uncle!
Lan Chiren smirks and drains his teacup. It is a good day to be alone. The end. Thank you for listening.